This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. Today's show is why many health problems are really hormone problems. Cardiologists have focused on cholesterol as the primary cause of cardiovascular disease. Researchers are increasingly focusing on inflammation as the common denominator of cardiovascular disease and other chronic illnesses. Taking a very different perspective, Dr. Serge Zougan and Dr. George Razakis, in their new book, Your Blood Doesn't Lie, make a strong case that the root cause of most chronic illnesses is hormone and blood chemistry imbalance. Dr. Zougan, welcome.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
And I would point out your name starts with a D, but the D is silent, so it's D-Z-U-G-A-N.
Correct.
And Dr. Razakis, welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
The two of you met at anti-aging conferences, but you came to prefer the term restorative medicine to anti-aging medicine. Can you share why?
Yes, because what we do is restore optimal physiology. That's the core concept behind what it is we think anti-aging medicine really is. When you say the word anti-aging, what is aging? Aging is time. And so you really can't be against time per se. So when you ask the question, what happens with time, what happens is your physiology deteriorates. So that if you are restoring optimal physiology, you are sort of, by definition, doing anti-aging medicine.
And one of the points that you make is so much of medicine, and even a fair amount of anti-aging medicine, is throwing medicines and supplements at problems instead of getting at the root cause. And when you get at the root cause, then a lot of the health problems cure themselves.
That's correct. And it is known that deficiencies of important hormones such as testosterone can cause multiple problems such as depression, fatigue, erectile dysfunction, just to name a few, heart disease. And when you give back someone's testosterone, you can alleviate those conditions. So if you broaden that concept to the many other deficiencies that occur, you can see how such deficiencies can lead to a whole slew of disease states. So we propose it's important to first optimize physiology before you choose to use a drug, because many a times age-related conditions will actually be caused by those deficiencies.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk about cholesterol. It's been the big bad boogeyman of cardiology. And I was fascinated when I read in Your Blood Doesn't Lie that cholesterol is at the very beginning of the building process for all the steroid hormones.
That's exactly right. You were fascinated, as were many doctors, when Dr. Zougan published a paper in 2002 showing that if you restore hormonal levels, cholesterol would decline. So he looked at the elevation of cholesterol as almost like a thermostat in the body for hormonal decline. And let's remember what hormones we're talking about. These are major hormones, estrogens, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, pregnenolone, and even vitamin D3. So the body is a very smart organism. It tries to maintain its existence. And if it senses a decline in these important hormones, it elevates the building block of hormones, which is cholesterol. And he proved that brilliantly, I would add, by taking a cohort of patients and measuring their cholesterol levels, restoring their hormonal levels, and he found that their cholesterol levels declined, in addition to many other positive benefits.
I can just add only one thing. If you take this whole era of elevation cholesterol, we can compare this elevation, aging elevation of cholesterol, with situations such as ones that happen to women during pregnancy. When female's body needs much more hormones for herself and her baby, cholesterol level is elevated significantly. And mean level of cholesterol during pregnancy elevates up to 314, much higher than maximum optimal normal level, so-called level we usually said 200 is okay and less than 200 is okay. And that's why when we think about this pregnant women, we think, okay, if you look all these healthy women, Nobody tries to treat cholesterol, higher cholesterol, with any drugs because it's a threat to baby and to woman during pregnancy. And when we put all these dots together, we can think in different directions. We can try to think, okay, what will happen when the woman will deliver baby? Cholesterol will normalize. There is no need for extra production of hormones. And a similar situation during aging, when production of hormones start to decline, body tries to keep us alive and produce different chemicals, very powerful steroidal hormones, such as pregnenolone, DHEA, cortisol, aldosterone, androstenedione, testosterone, estrogens, progesterone. For supporting life, our body tries to produce more hormones, but because aging problem with different chemicals, so-called enzymes that control conversion cholesterol to these hormones, do not work anymore efficiently. Our body just keep high level of cholesterol in spite of this compensatory approach of our body. And that's why when we restore level, useful level of hormones, practically all patients responded in positive way and cholesterol level declined. In other words, if no need extra cholesterol for production of hormones, cholesterol level just decreased without any statins, without any other cholesterol lowering drugs.
So instead of seeing cholesterol as the enemy, we need to be asking ourselves, why is it going up and what do I need to learn from this?
It is correct. It is correct. We always must remember that cholesterol is not absolutely bad guy that we hear every single day, because cholesterol is important part of blockage arteries. This is everybody knows, but unfortunately, practically no doctors who talk to patients about significant cholesterol contribution to proper functioning of our body. And our body needs cholesterol for normal maintenance of condition of cell membrane, for production of steroid hormones, bile acids that helps our body work efficiently with food and remove toxins, and in conjunction with sunlight, vitamin D3. That's why without cholesterol, our body cannot live. Furthermore, 25% of cholesterol is localized in brain, and all cholesterol in the brain is product of local synthesis. Since this carrier, so-called good and bad cholesterol, it's not really cholesterol. They transport lipoproteins. They are unable to cross the blood-brain barrier.
Your book indicates that cholesterol goes up until age 70. What happens at age 70?
Yes, so this is an interesting question. What happened around this age? Our body changes physical appearance, and our brain evaluate new body with less bone density, with maybe less or more weight, with less collagen and elastin in our skin. Our body accept this elderly body as new entity and start to adjust production of hormones according to need of this elderly body needs. It is the same situation when you travel Europe and you have a jet lag, and in maybe 2-3 days, your brain just reset computer and you can live normal life in Italy, for example, without all this permanent like sleepiness. Our body smart. Every time when we try to change our body composition or lifestyle, our body tries to adjust to daily normal functioning and change production of hormones, change production of different so-called neurotransmitters that keeps us functioning, brain functioning, and keep us happy or depressed.
Most people realize that stress causes cholesterol to go up, but starvation and exercise also cause cholesterol to go up. So when people are trying to get fit by losing weight and exercising, we're likely to see the cholesterol go up.
Yes, because what happened, if you will take, for example, diet. When we're doing exercise, we need more hormones, anabolic hormones, for efficient work. And then approximately after 45 minutes after a heavy workup, our body tries to repair damaged structure, muscle structure, and other structures after heavy exercise. Try to repair damaged cells or tissues in body. If you take such thing as starvation or diet, what happened when we try diet and why so many diets failed? Because every time when you try to decrease calorie income, you declare war against your body, and it looks like you move from one place where you live and where it's a lot of food, you move in place where no food, and your body slow down metabolism and tries to preserve calories, and you can lose some weight. But when you come back to the place where you live with normal life and where plenty food, your body start to put all these pounds back in storage, because our brain think, oh, maybe next time I will have same difficult situation with food, and I need to provide some storages. That's why when we talk to our client about possibility of weight loss, we said that number one, what we need to do, we need to restore foundation of your body. We need to restore normal metabolism. And when we restore normal metabolism, you can start to lose weight. But if you didn't start to lose weight, or you even gain weight after you start to use, for example, different supplements and hormones, what happened during this time, you increase significantly metabolism. And you can burn some calorie, but also you increase absorption, and your body absorb more calorie. And quite often, all this food that we eat after age 35, 40, we do not need to eat such huge amount of food. And that's why what we need to do, we need to put on balance calories that we spend. Maybe we need to increase exercise. If you are doing plenty exercise and you still have problem with weight, you need to look, okay, you look better and have more muscles, or you still have some fat problem. In such situation, you need to watch your calories.
What you're saying is weight loss is so complicated and so individualized that there's not one solution for people.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Still on cholesterol, most people worry about it being too high, but you talk about how if it's too low, not only do you have the serious problems of not building the neurotransmitters and the brain tissue and the steroid hormones, but you talk about it being associated with mental illness and cancer and respiratory diseases?
It is correct. There is a lot of problems that related to low level of cholesterol. Because remember, and this is what you start to talk about today, you said that our body needs cholesterol for production, extremely powerful hormones, steroidal hormones that control our body functioning. And when we have low level of cholesterol, we have low level of hormones because there is limited amount of building blocks or raw material for production of hormones. And for example, your body can produce low level of cortisol, so-called stress hormone, and we can be in huge problem because cortisol also a fight and fly hormone. It helps control our daily stress. It helps us with mental health. It helps with a lot of things. If you have a low level of, for example, progesterone or estrogen, you can have problem with menstrual cycle. If you have problem with testosterone, you can have erectile dysfunction in young age. Also, low level of hormones lead to miscarriages. A low level of hormones lead to situation when you try to relieve, for example, stress and you start to drink. And we have several patients who were heavy drinker. When they start program, they just stop drinking. Patients can control stress naturally, put in normal condition of cortisol production and DHEA. And there is a lot of problem related to low production of hormones. Quite often, we had women who have many miscarriages and they have infertility problem. And when we check hormones, usually hormones low, cholesterol low, and when we restore a level of these hormones, you know, we have some success with the problem.
So when you see a hormone level below 160, 170, you work with the people on getting the cholesterol levels up?
When people have low level of cholesterol, unfortunately, we cannot elevate level of cholesterol in such situation, just replace hormones. And cholesterol level, usually when low, it's still low. there is nothing we can do, but at least we can fix problem that was created by low cholesterol. And even if you'll take a very, very painful topic such as autism, we had some autistic event a couple days ago here, and we thought a lot about these poor kids with so bad health issue. And what do we know that approximately 75% of autistic kids, they have low level of cholesterol. Mm. And we do know that when they eat some eggs, they have significant improvement. And we think that because they get more cholesterol, very possible that they produce more hormones. And all these hormones, they neurosteroids like pregnenolone and DHEA, like progesterone. This is powerful hormones, neurosteroids. This is hormone that our brain in neurological tissue requires for permanent maintenance.
One more thing on cholesterol, because people get their blood tests and the doctors often give them the usual advice. You noted that when the hormones are in balance, we don't need as much of the HDL cholesterol.
You kill me with this question. It is very interesting topic. Like I briefly mentioned, you know, there is a lot of confusion about the whole area of cholesterol. And, you know, people said good and bad cholesterol. And I am a retired heart surgeon. Mm-hmm. Heart surgeon, and it's killed me because I understand that there is no such thing as good and bad cholesterol, because when we talk about good cholesterol and we mention HDL, HDL is not cholesterol. HDL is carrier or transport for cholesterol. But this HDL transport also phospholipids and proteins and triglycerides and cholesterol ester and cholesterol. It's transport for, if you will compare this unit, good cholesterol, HDL, with military car, and we can say, okay, we have one driver, we have five soldiers, we have general, we have colonel, but some this military car will be empty. But we accounted this military car, and we said, okay, level of HDL, this one or this one. And what happened several years ago, Pfizer tried to create a drug, and they basically created drug that elevate HDL. And a drug has name torcetrapib. And what happened, this company lost almost $1 billion because after 1 year a study, this drug raised the risk of death by 59% and heart problems by 25%. And what happened, LDL just take extra cholesterol from factories that produce hormones. And if you do not have excess of HDL, there is no reason for elevation of HDL. And another thing, when we try to measure cholesterol, what we measure? We measure HDL, good, so-called good cholesterol. We measure LDL, and we measure triglycerides. And we added these three units, and triglycerides divided 5. Triglycerides even not cholesterol. HDL and LDL, it's not cholesterol, they are lipoprotein. And if you will increase a level of HDL by using this HDL drugs that can elevate HDL, you just will increase total cholesterol. And if you will increase total cholesterol, you again will be confused because you will need to use now drugs for total cholesterol.
You really asked us a real good question when you said Dugan is coming out with a new book on cholesterol, and we lecture on this subject all over the world. In fact, we're going to Dubai in a few week or two, actually next week, to speak on this subject. And it's so complicated. You know, LDL, you know, the supposed bad cholesterol, like Dr. Dugan said, is a carrier. It's like UPS. Mm-hmm. It just takes cholesterol and sends it out, you know, to the body. And HDL is supposed to bring it back. And if you give people back the hormones they're missing, then the need for cholesterol to go out is less. So your liver will just down produce or produce less cholesterol. So you don't need as much LDL, so to speak. So your LDL should decline. So if less is going out, then less needs to come back. So HDL does tend to drop. It's a normal expected response when you restore physiology. And then as Dr. Dugan was saying, I don't know if the audience caught this. It's really interesting. The actual calculation for cholesterol is equal to LDL plus HDL plus triglycerides divided by 5. So just the number, the actual numeric number of what the total cholesterol is a function of these things, LDL, HDL. But then if you look at, you know, HDL or LDL, it's a carrier. It's like a truck. If you look at a truck, like a roadway truck on the highway, you don't know exactly what's inside that truck. There might be some cholesterol in there. There'll be phospholipids. It might be empty. So the whole numeric game that is out there on what constitutes, you know, good numbers and, you know, what is good and bad, it loses credibility very quickly.
I'm glad we got into how complex and often misleading the cholesterol numbers are. Did want to ask a couple questions about statins. I think most people know that statin medications can cause muscle weakness, but I was surprised to read it can weaken heart muscles as well.
It is correct. What we do know that the incidence of congestive heart failure has tripled in the time that statins have been on the market. This is fact. We know that statins may impair heart pumping function due to their myopathic effect. That's why they have all this like fibromyalgia-like problems. And we do know that in 1990, Merck received a patent for statin drugs formulated with up to 1,000 milligram of coenzyme Q10 because statins deplete coenzyme Q10, and this could be contribute to heart disease. And if you will not use coenzyme Q10, you can get a cardiomyopathy, and this is can lead to congestive heart failure. But unfortunately, Merck has not brought this product to market or educated physicians on the importance of supplementing coenzyme Q10 to decrease danger of this drug on the heart. And because they hold patent, other drug company cannot coming out with statins coenzyme Q product. And that's why when you take statins, definitely you need to think about coenzyme Q10, because coenzyme Q10 is extremely important for supporting normal functioning of each cells in our body.
Gee, that patent's probably so old that it's about ready to come off.
It's probably, yes. It's 1990. It was 1990.
You also indicated that statins disturb sex hormone levels.
It is correct. We saw many patients who want statins. They had very low level of hormones. And also we saw that I work for 7 years in cancer center, and we saw that patients who take statins and they came with cancer always told to these patients, please come back to your doctor and tell that they have information that, and this is available information for all patients, that statins drugs and fibrates, they increase chance of cancer in animal studies. And studies in human beings show that it decreases hormones. And because hormones important for supporting immune system and they got serious cancer and they have a threat to life, we ask patients go to cardiologist and tell, okay, I don't know, I will die from heart attack or not, but what do you think? Do I need continue to take statin drugs because this information or I need to stop? And it's interesting, in such situation, approximately 95% of cardiologists very compliant. They said, okay, you can die from cancer. We agree. We need to stop temporary statins.
One more question on statins. Correct me if I'm wrong, but my impression is that the research indicates that statin medications have some very modest effects in decreasing overall mortality for men, but there isn't any data indicating that statin medications reduce overall mortality for women.
If you'll take total mortality, there is no proof that statins decrease total mortality. And even furthermore, I can tell there is a lot of studies that show when you take statin drugs, you can decrease percentage of people who die from coronary heart disease, but you increase total mortality. That's why when we use these serious drugs, we need to think very clearly, what do we want to do? And as for me, I don't care about heart problem if I will die from cancer.
Mm-hmm.
or I will die from other problem. I wanted to be in this better percentage of total survival group.
So your impression is that it's a wash for men or women, so why take them if it doesn't decrease your overall mortality?
Exactly. Exactly. The use of statins cause other risk factors that can lead to death.
And it's interesting. Maybe I will add just this small information. Last year, I believe in March, Japanese doctors published a couple of excellent articles, and they use simvastatin for treatment of several type of cancer, because simvastatin has extremely high potency chemo effect, and they use as chemo drug for treatment of cancer. That's why, you know, you're just wondering how we can give this drug as candy for so large group of population, and we didn't even think what can do really this drug. When you got this information about use as chemo drug, you said, oh my God, this so strong medication, and you need to think clear if you put on this medication your patients.
We're talking with the authors of the newly published book, Your Blood Doesn't Lie. The website for the book is yourblooddoesn'tlie.com. Just leave the apostrophe out of the doesn't. And the website for the clinic is zugan.com. That's spelled D-Z-U-G-A-N.com, D-Z-U-G-A-N.com. Dr. Zugan, you're both an MD and a PhD, background in cardiology, and I believe you came here from the Ukraine in 1996?
In 1995.
95, okay.
Yeah.
And you've done a lot of work with the Life Extension Foundation.
Yes, I was president of Life Extension Scientific Inc. I work for Life Extension Foundation 3 years, and I have a pretty good group of doctors and nurses and dietitians and some health specialists. In my department, we had 25 people, and we provide scientific information to a Life Extension member. It's approximately 150,000 member, Life Extension member. And all my employees talk about use of different supplements. When they call and they ask about some interesting, serious references that they can take and look or discuss with their doctor, and we provide this information. We help patients. We educate patients. Our mission was education, and, you know, give some lights on such problems as migraine, and fibromyalgia, and cholesterol, depression, and any conditions.
And Dr. Razaka, you're an ophthalmologist and author of two textbooks. Could you give us maybe a 1 or 2 minute thumbnail of what happens to a typical patient at your clinic in terms of evaluation and treatment?
Yes. People who wish to feel better, look better, prevent disease, and help treat the diseases they have, they come to us. And we have systems that gather a very detailed medical history, and then we request blood work to look at all the hormones, for example, and other things. And then that information is analyzed by Dr. Zugan and his team of experts, and a program is developed. And then we explain the program to the patient. We explain why they need what they need, how much, and how much they need based on their blood levels and their history. So we'll give women, for example, the estrogens they need, progesterone, DHEA, and other substances and supplements as necessary. And then going forward, we request feedback from the patient, sometimes on a weekly basis, to be sure that the symptoms we are trying to resolve are improving. And when we get feedback, based on the feedback, we'll make adjustments in the program. We might increase the estrogens or decrease and the like. And that's the essence of what we do.
So it's test, individualize, and test again, and adjust, and test some more.
Yes, blood tests, followed by listening to the patient very carefully, and then a repeat of the blood tests in about 3 months. And then usually after that, we can do it twice a year.
With women getting older, what most typically goes wrong with the hormones?
Well, one of the major hormonal problems in women is a drop in their progesterone. And that has profound effects on many organ systems. Anxiety is a typical manifestation of a drop in progesterone. progesterone is important for building bone. Very few people are aware of that. So therefore, bone loss starts to occur. Difficulty with sleep. The immune system can have difficulties as well. And don't forget that when progesterone drops, estrogens may still be present. So now you have a situation where the woman is estrogen dominant, and estrogens themselves can cause their own problems. Going forward, the estrogens start to decline, and then other imbalances can occur in DHEA and pregnenolone and testosterone. So it's an unnecessary circumstance, quite frankly, that women need to go through this decline in this day and age when these imbalances can be identified in blood testing and reversed.
So a lot of the public thinks that the problem is declining estrogen levels when it's most typically declining progesterone levels.
Yes, in the beginning, yes, we routinely see rather profound drops in progesterone. But it still varies. Every so often, someone will have a very profound drop in estrogen as well.
Maybe Dr. Azakis, maybe I will add just a couple of words. The biggest problem that happened with females and male approximately after 35, we lost balance between different hormones. Like Dr. Azakis said, the biggest problem again started around 35 and continued to 40. Our progesterone production declined significantly. Many women start to have fibrocystic disease, different problem with endometriosis, with fibroids, with constipation, elevation of blood pressure, arrhythmias, insomnia, all of them related to dominance of estrogen. Also, approximately this time, a little bit later, 40-45, we start to have problem with so-called adrenal stress index ratio between DHEA and cortisol. And what happened, DHEA production declined more than cortisol, and cortisol, we need cortisol. Cortisol also decreases with age. It's not true that people talk about on TV when with age production of cortisol increase and we became fat. It's not true. We did study and it clearly show that cortisol production decline with age, same pattern as other hormones. Only problem with this, production of DHEA decline more than production of cortisol, and we start to have a dominance of cortisol, and cortisol start to work as a death hormone because cortisol is catabolic hormone and DHEA is anabolic hormone. DHEA is building hormone and cortisol is hormone that destroy different things. If you will take, for example, female body, and you can go any place and you will see women after age 45, 50, they start to have mustache, facial hair, they start to lose hair. And it's happened not because they take testosterone. They take, for example, nothing, but what happened, production of testosterone declined less than production of female hormones, estrogen, progesterone. Production of testosterone in male's body declined more quicker than production of estrogen. And we have estrogen dominance and start to have all this, you know, big enlarged breasts and moon-like faces. We lost our waistline, became like I said, like Santa Claus.
The problem with DHEA and cortisol that you were talking about, is that also what's commonly called adrenal burnout syndrome?
You know, we prefer do not use adrenal fatigue or any other definition for problem with adrenal glands, because we have several hormones that produce adrenal glands. And this is like symptoma complex that characterize problem with adrenal glands. But it's partial problem. It's just small piece of major problem with big combination of physiological errors that our body collected during aging. That's why when we talk about different conditions, we said, okay, we have no any deal with adrenal fatigue or restlessness syndrome or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder or with cholesterol. What we do, we restore or optimize physiology. We just try to correct errors of physiology that our body acquires during lifespan. When we restore foundation, it's same thing like, you know, when you move, for example, a new house and you decide, okay, I need paint my wall, I need put wallpaper, I need repair a little bit roof. But first what you need to do, you must look what's going on with foundation, because you can do this expensive work inside of house, but any kind of small, not even hurricane wind, can destroy your building because there is very weak foundation.
I wanted to ask about thyroid problems. I've seen so many women that appear to have thyroid problems. They go to their doctors and they run the usual test and they say, oh, your thyroid functioning is normal. And then several years later, they're getting thyroid surgery or having major problems. What's typically going wrong there?
If you take thyroid, it's a slight different situation because in thyroid you can have some nodes that malignant or maybe not malignant, and it affects your production of thyroid hormones in both directions. If you talk about the situation when you need surgery, it's probably a situation when your thyroid gland produces a lot of thyroid hormones and probably person has some nodes and they need to be removed. If you'll take situation with typical age, again, production of hormones decline the same pattern as other hormones. And when we look thyroid, we usually look different tests, such as TSH, we look what's going on with T3 and with T4, and based on this, we try to make decision what best way optimize this hormone. And some doctors even use such term as T3 deficiency syndrome or T3 fatigue syndrome when production of T3 is not optimal and we need optimize. But we prefer to use Armour thyroid, because Armour thyroid has T3 and T4, and it's usually easier, you know, more natural way we can restore a problem with deficiency of T4 and T3. Sometimes you give T4 hormone, and you are not sure that T4 can convert to T3, and this is problem. And we saw so many patients who take drugs that has only T4 and T3 level still on very low side or even very low.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a point though, and that is that you can't look at specific hormones in isolation. If you only look at the thyroid, for example, T3 and T4. And you're chasing the T3 and T4, but you're forgetting all the other steroidal hormones, then you're cheating yourself, so to speak. It's like we use an analogy of someone having four flat tires. If your car has four flat tires, or shall we say four deficiencies, including thyroid, you can fix one flat tire, so to speak, and you still won't get back on the highway. You need to fix all of them to get optimal result. And our medical model today seems to be predisposed to choosing one substance and talking about its results in isolation. You can't just say, oh, try this vitamin D3, see if it helps. Oh, did it help? Didn't it help? That might be just one other flat tire. You need to fix D3. You need to fix the steroidal hormones like testosterone, estrogen, progesterone. You need to fix thyroid. You need to fix everything. And it's a very common mistake to just focus on one substance. And by the way, when you fix the steroidal hormones, you're maximizing the function of the cell membrane. So when the thyroid does produce hormone, it's better listened to, or it more easily activates cells at the cell membrane level. So when you say to us, you know, thyroid, of course you've got to fix T3 and T4, so we use Armour, but you've got to remember to fix everything.
Well, in American medicine, not only do we tend to focus on one thing at a time, but send people off to a different specialist for just that thing and then hope that there's communication between the doctors.
Yeah, well, the problem, too, is that when you leave the drug model because enter the world of physiology, sometimes carry the ideas of the drug model into the physiologic realm. For example, if you're in the drug model, so to speak, all you can do is work one drug at a time because a drug is a foreign substance, obviously. It has effects and side effects, and if anything, we think of it as causing potential difficulty with other drugs. We always worry about, you know, two drugs interacting with each other in a negative manner. So for that reason, I think we're predisposed to thinking in a monomodal, single-modal approach. But when you walk into the world of physiology, now you have to think multimodal. You can't just give one substance. So I was in Greece lecturing with Dr. Dugan, and a doctor came up to me and he said, oh, you know, I'm using vitamin D3. I looked at him and I said, well, great. I said, that's fantastic. Now, what are you doing when you give vitamin D3? You're optimizing the level of vitamin D3 in the body. You're trying to optimize physiology. Well, take that idea now and stretch it out to all the other errors that you can identify, and then you'll see some fascinating results.
I want to talk about the men. You talk, of course, about the importance of free testosterone levels and using aromatase inhibitors. I was surprised in the book when you gave the case histories, you just gave the testosterone levels rather than the free testosterone levels.
Right.
That is correct, and that's because we believe that total testosterone is far more significant than free testosterone.
Yeah, and it's maybe not just our belief, but we know that our body has approximately 2% of free testosterone, and you cannot make a conclusion on a condition of whole body based on 2% and ignore 98%. This is your second. When I work in Life Extension Foundation, we talk a lot with Bill Falloon on value of free testosterone, and I saw many patients who have a very high level of free testosterone, and they had low level of total testosterone, and they had severe erectile dysfunction. And I saw many Life Extension members who have normal level of testosterone, and they had extremely low level of free testosterone, and they were absolutely sexually normal. And all these practical observations and collection of all this information just lead us to conclusion that we need to look deeply in physiology and think about this.
Now, what attracted me to Dr. Dzugin 5-6 years ago when I met him at an A4M conference is that there are conflicting opinions based on how anti-aging doctors, so to speak, do what they do. So me, back then, I was new at this entire field, and I elected to find somebody who I thought really understood it very, very deeply. And lucky for me, I found Dr. Dzugin, and together we have built an organization that now allows us to teach doctors how to do this type of care. We actually do it all over the country and as far away as Cyprus, believe it or not. So we've actually built in the last 5 years the first method. So we call this the Dzugin method of restorative medicine. And the world needs a method. The world needs a standard, because when you have a standard and a method, then you can gather data and then publish results and clarify these issues that you're bringing up to us right now, like free testosterone, total testosterone, saliva testing, blood testing. So we're cleaning up, if you will, the confusion that exists.
We'll get back to Dr. Dzugin and Dr. Rozakis in a moment. Today, we've been focusing on the body chemistry of living longer and healthier. Also vitally important is having a clear sense of purpose and good skills at following that purpose and coping well with stress. Historically, psychologists have focused on fixing what's wrong. From almost 40 years of clinical experience, I'm very good at fixing problems, but what I enjoy most is helping people who want to live even better, to achieve a more successful, more fulfilling life. You don't even have to leave home. My personal coaching by phone can help you with personal and professional goals. Just as athletes use coaches to achieve their full potential, my coaching can help you achieve your full potential and have a more fulfilling life. If you have specific issues or are interested in life makeover coaching to develop a comprehensive plan for your life, give me a call and I'll see if I can get you on my coaching schedule. The phone number is on all my websites, and further information about my coaching is on drbricke.com. That's drbricke.com. And now back to Dr. Dzugin and Dr. Rozakis. I do want to ask one more question about male hormones. I noticed you talked about prescribing creams for some of the men, and I see some doctors prescribing chorionic gonadotropin. Is it just that creams are more convenient, or is there an advantage to the creams?
Okay, I can answer this question. Quite often we use a micronized progesterone triest and testosterone gels because when we use topical gels, we know that they contain very highly lipophilic molecules with low molecular weight, and it can be very well absorbed through the skin. And our adipose tissue can be used as a reservoir for these hormones, and it's easy to facilitate individualized dose. When we talk about human chorionic gonadotropin, you know that some doctors use this for people who have erectile dysfunction, who have a low level of testosterone. There is a lot of studies were done in 1996, 95, and lately it has interest again in weight loss special program. People use these injections, and with my former boss, Dr. Smith, when I work in cancer center, we use a lot of these injections for our obese employee, and we had no real results, even one patient or one employee. The problem with HCG is, you know, that HCG increase production of LH, and LH control production of testosterone and progesterone. And what happened when we try to elevate level of testosterone, when level of testosterone low, we indeed can do this with HCG. But now body check progesterone level. We did. We checked progesterone level, and we found that many men, if normal range for progesterone from 0.3 to 1.2, level of progesterone quite often elevated to 9, 10, 11. In other words, we created, pretty high level, like 10 times, 9 times higher level of progesterone in male's body. Sometimes progesterone extremely helpful for people who have enlargement of prostate, and we use probably for 90% of our clients, we use progesterone, in men, because progesterone is not just a female hormone. Progesterone affects, we know, uterus, affect breast, but also affect brain, affects bone, and also it helps with erectile dysfunction, because when you use progesterone, especially in the evening, it can strengthen your parasympathetic system, and parasympathetic ending release nitric oxide, and it works like Viagra in such case. And that's why quite often patients who have erectile dysfunction and they start to take a small dose of progesterone before bedtime, they come back to Dr. Azakis and they said, oh, I have again morning erection like I have 20 or 30 years ago.
Then they love you, huh?
Yeah.
One of the areas that you've done a lot of research is with migraines. Can you tell us about that research?
Dr. Dugan wrote a book entitled The Migraine Cure, I think it was 3-4 years ago now.
It's 2006, I believe.
2006, yeah. It was a great book. It sells out at all the meetings now. It's a book that attributes migraine to physiologic error, as most conditions tend to be, including hormonal deficiencies, magnesium, calcium imbalances, serotonin, melatonin, or pineal gland abnormalities in the gastrointestinal system. And what's so fascinating about this is that all of these, or most of these abnormalities, also affect the autonomic nervous system, you know, that in the system in your body that controls your heart rate, whether you're constipated or have diarrhea. That's the sympathetic parasympathetic nervous system. And the sympathetic parasympathetic nervous system is what controls your blood vessels. If they're constricted, that's your sympathetic nervous system. If they're dilated, that's the parasympathetic nervous system. So what's so intriguing is that by adjusting physiology, you can adjust the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, which has direct effect on migraine. So what's been happening is that we've been receiving people who have failed virtually every conventional medical therapy out there. They tried Topamax and Depakote and Imitrax, and when everything has failed them, then they find us, and then we actually stop many of their medications and then look at their blood, adjust their hormones, adjust their magnesium levels, give them probiotics, and adjust their serotonin, melatonin levels, and keep working that process until we get their physiology under control, and then their migraines start to go away. It's hard work, but it's extremely gratifying, because some of the patients we've had have had migraines for a very long time. But we look at migraine as a very challenging situation where physiology is in bad shape.
When we gave this title to this book, the Migraine Cure Book, we did this with purpose because all doctors around the world, all patients know that there is no cure for migraine. And we try to provoke them. First of all, when we talk about cure, everybody thinks that this is some sort of miracle work. But when you take definition, and because, you know, I learned Latin in medical school, and I remember that cure, nothing wrong with word cure, because in Latin, cure, it's care. It's care. And per definition of cure, it's, you can say, feel good again. And what happened, for example, with client or patient when you suggested program and patient had daily migraine for 46 years and now no migraine. Single person who read, they have, oh, this book has perfect sense. But not very smart people, they said, oh, cure? You know, I even will not read this book. I mean, I'm not suffering from migraine. You're suffering from migraine. And just take few minutes. I mean, it will take you 3 hours, 4 hours for reading, and you will find some interesting, absolutely different information. And problem with migraine, when you try use a single model approach, you try to give one drug, you always fail. But as you know, migraine, when patients have migraine, the whole vascular system of the brain goes through a different phase, a constriction and then relaxation. And what happens when you use, for example, Imitrax, when your arteries in this first phase, you will make migraine worse. And you can give on Imitrax only in situation where patient already has vascular system relaxed in phase of dilation. That's why quite often when you try to prevent migraine, you need to increase condition of parasympathetic system that lead to dilation of arteries and small capillary in the brain. But when you have already migraine, you need to be very careful what kind of drugs you need to apply during different phase, because if you will give Imitrax, for example, during this first phase, what can happen? You can get ischemic stroke, you can get heart attack because constriction of arterial system. That's why when we talk about this whole things, we said, okay, when we use program for our clients who suffer from migraine, we use hormonal restorative therapy. We try to restore deficient hormones. Then we try to correct imbalance between sympathetic parasympathetic system. We try to watch ratio between calcium and magnesium, because calcium can lead to constriction of arteries and magnesium can relax artery. Then we help pineal gland with resetting with use of melatonin. And like Dr. Azakis also mentioned, we always restore natural intestinal flora, because everybody thinks that serotonin is brain chemical, but serotonin home in the guts, in intestinum. That's why we must remember that people who have irritable bowel syndrome, people who have celiac disease, constipation, if you will not restore normal intestinal flora, if you will not restore normal daily bowel movement, forget, you will still have migraine. And also, big impact on migraine has parasite infestation, and we always try to use a parasite clean system, especially if patients have additional problems such as allergy problem, asthma, different psoriasis problem, skin problem, and usually it works pretty well.
So all of the problems we've talked about need a systems approach, and migraines are even more complicated.
Migraine is extremely complicated.
Your patients probably say, I don't care about cure. What you did was a miracle.
We have very appreciative patients. There's no doubt about that. One of them who lets us use her name is Annie Potts, who's a famous actress. She was in Designing Women, and Annie's great. She had migraines, and then she came to Cleveland, and we were able to help her, and she lets us tell her story. So, but it's hard work. It's pain management. As you can imagine, just very hard work, but we do it because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and unfortunately, like Dr. Ozaki said, we have not simple migraine cases. We practically always have like patients who have failure of conventional medicine and they came to us. Some patients take like 119 supplements and 20 drugs and morphine, and you try to figure out what you can do and, you know, how, what program can be used for, you know, quicker effect. Sometimes it works very fast, like Dr. Razakis mentioned, Annie Potts' case. During first week, she was released from migraine. Some patients require a lot time because, you know, many drugs, and because they use many drugs, they have condition that has named tachyphylaxis. This is decreased response of our cells membrane to normal agents in our body. And when you introduce, for example, hormones like DHA, pregnenolone, you restore level of this, your body keep low sensitivity to them in spite of your normalized level. That's why, you know, it's hard work. That's why quite often, especially migraine clients, they update us every single day. They said, okay, I still have this. Or, yeah, it's like your emergency room at home. They are our family and they update us sometimes several times per day.
I'm glad there's a last resort for migraine sufferers. I would love to talk to you guys all day, but you know, we can't do that. If you could talk just a little bit about one more area that you've done a lot of research, and that's macular degeneration.
I would preface the discussion on macular degeneration by a discussion briefly on a principle that we've evolved. And the principle is that many diseases are actually caused by errors in physiology. Therefore, those diseases are actually related or similar to each other. In other words, this person's erectile dysfunction, this person's depression, this person's migraine, this person's menopause, they're all caused by errors of physiology, usually the same typical errors. And then when you fix the errors in physiology, all of those conditions benefit. So that means they're related. You could stretch it a little more and say maybe they're just the same disease because they come from a root cause. That's what our book is about. Your blood doesn't lie. So the question I had as an ophthalmologist was, I wonder if macular degeneration is also an example of a disease that is stemming from errors in physiology. And in the beginning, I thought to myself, well, the macula is part of the brain, and a lot of what we do is brain therapy, shall we say. When you treat hot flashes, that's brain therapy. When you treat depression, that's brain therapy. When you treat fatigue with our method, that's also affecting the brain. So I thought, well, maybe the macula can benefit as well since it's part of the brain. Very simple, rudimentary thinking, just a clue, a hunch, if you will. And then in the American Journal of Ophthalmology, a paper was published, and it indicated that patients with macular degeneration have very low levels of DHEA. Well, that probably was missed by everybody in my field because they don't use DHEA. They don't know what DHEA is. It's just something that you wouldn't really take a second look at. But to me, it meant a lot because when we do restorative medicine, we use DHEA all the time. So to me, a DHEA deficiency in macular degeneration patients meant they probably had other hormonal deficiencies as well, estrogens, testosterone, pregnenolone, and the like. So then I delved very deeply into the literature to see what was known about the macula and hormones. And I found just fantastic research out of Italy that taught me that the macula actually needs hormones to function properly. There's 17 different hormones that actually work in the macula as part of the normal visual process. So, you know, that stunned me. I didn't even know as an ophthalmologist that my macula needs hormones. And then we've been talking a lot on the show about cholesterol and how cholesterol converts into hormones. Turns out that the macula, when you look at it, you see these little tiny spots. They're called drusen. They are what defines the disease as degeneration, drusen. And if you had asked me 3 years ago, you know, what's inside those little tiny spots called drusen, I would have said, oh, those are breakdown products. That's what they taught us in our training. It's just garbage breakdown products. It turns out there's a lot of cholesterol in drusen. And so you see it, right? It all comes together. Why is cholesterol accumulating in the macula? Well, it's because the macula needs hormones, and it's probably trying to produce hormones by converting that cholesterol into hormones, that it needs, but it can't. And so the macula just sits there accumulating cholesterol. It can't get hormones from the blood because we just said earlier that the levels are very low. So the macula or the macular degeneration patient may in fact be having the disease because of a deficiency of hormones. And other important substances that are also physiologic, such as zinc, which has already been proven, and other vitamins, as you know. So we put together a paper, passed it around to my colleagues. No one's had any problem with it. It made sense to them. The retina specialists I showed it to liked it. I was asked to publish the results in a European journal, which I have. And we're doing studies now to see if we can help the macular patient. So far, our data shows that we're stabilizing the macula, and we're thinking of all the other things we can do to get more from these efforts. So therefore, if it turns out to be true that, which we think it is, that the macula is degenerating because of these errors in physiology, then that principle we talked about early on would apply, that that disease is also caused by deficiencies such as DHEA and or progesterone and or testosterone. I hope I explained it to you. It's sort of a bit of a complex explanation, but the more you look, the more you find. And we could go for hours on this subject, of course. I know time is tight, but the more you look, the more you find that the macula or the macular degeneration patient is impaired physiologically. And ergo, that's why we do restorative medicine. We want to restore optimal physiology.
Dr. Azakis mentioned drusen, and he mentioned cholesterol in this drusen. And drusen is very, very similar to atherosclerotic plaques. Mm-hmm. If you'll take atherosclerotic plaques, you will find cholesterol and calcium and lipoproteins and fibrin and collagen and platelets and monocytes. And basically, same thing we have with drusen. It is the same repairing and reaction of our body, because all these elements that I mentioned, they are typical agents of healing process. When you cut arm, your body tries to heal this wound by bringing all these ingredients for healing, for creation scar. And it is the same situation in eye, it is the same situation in arteries, because during aging, we have imbalance between anabolic reactions, so building or reconstruction reactions, and catabolic. And when we have prevalence of catabolic reactions and our body cannot catch up repairing, when we have damage in any place, we start to have all this heart problem because blockages arteries, brain problem, eyes problem, etc., etc.
Yeah, and Dr. Dugan is absolutely right, because in the review of the literature, we found that patients with macular degeneration have a higher incidence of cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. So his correlation between drusen and coronary artery disease and atherosclerosis bears out in terms of studies.
A lot of things in medicine just haven't made sense to me, for example, statins and that kind of thing. And when I read Your Blood Doesn't Lie, I just said, wow, this just makes so much sense. And it just is such a refreshing approach. Really impressed with the book. The book, again, is Your Blood Doesn't Lie. The website for the book is yourblooddoesn'tlie.com. Just leave the apostrophe out of the doesn't. And for the clinic, it's Zugan.com, DZUGAN.com. Dr. Zugan and Dr. Razakis, thank you so much. Absolutely fascinating.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bricke.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Commentary. When listening to Dr. Zugan and Dr. Razakis, they make so much sense it's easy to miss how unique and how profound their message is. While most of medicine, and even anti-aging medicine, tends to focus on medications or supplements to treat a symptom, Dr. Zugan and Dr. Razakis take a comprehensive systems approach. Their premise is that hormones and other body chemistry needs to be rebalanced to a more youthful level, such as a healthy 30-year-old level. They see aging as focusing on time rather than focusing on optimal health. They report that when the foundation or the system is optimized, many health problems clear up on their own. They see cholesterol not as a problem to be corrected, but a symptom that hormones are out of balance and desperately, but ineffectively, trying to correct that imbalance. We focused on hormones, but they also attend to vitamins, minerals, enzymes, and other chemistry as measured by blood, saliva, and hair samples. They have both theory and data. With individual patients, it's test, treat, test again, tweak, etc. They also have conducted considerable research in areas such as hormone replacement and conditions such as migraine headaches and macular degeneration. They see teaching their method as a way of not only improving patient care, but generating research on the effectiveness of the Zugin method. Their clinic is in Cleveland, and they're training physicians around the world in the Zugin method. Their book, Your Blood Doesn't Lie, has excellent content while also being well-organized and easy to read. I highly recommend it. You are listening to Ageless Lifestyles on webtalkradio.net and permanently archived on agelesslifestyles.com. For information on my books, Defy Aging and 52 Baby Steps to Grow Young, and my anti-aging hypnosis CDs, personal coaching, and my keynote and seminar services, just go to notaging.com or to drbricky.com. I'd love to hear your comments and suggestions. Send them to radio at agelesslifestyles.com. This is your anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, thanking you for joining us on our quest to live longer, healthier, and happier.